Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 11th of June, Anno Domini 2016, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Gabe the Intern.
Gabe the Intern is still with us. We had him locked in a closet all week. We let him out on Saturdays for the show. And we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Oh, and it's 6 minutes after the hour.
And I thought I didn't think he'd want to come back with us.
Well, we had him locked in a closet. Where was he going to go? You know, we slipped a little food and water under the door.
Oh, see, I didn't get the memo on that one. I was a part.
Yeah. We may let him out in the sunshine this week, though.
Rob, let him out?
Yeah. He's looking a little peaked. You might need a little vitamin D.
Really, yeah.
We'll let him out. A petition launched last Friday asked the Electronic Frontier Foundation, or it is commonly known, the EFF, to investigate Microsoft's aggressive moves to convince and cajole users into upgrading to Windows 10. The request was launched on change.org, a popular online petition website, and by early Monday had garnered more than 470 signatures, and is well beyond that now. Microsoft's practices with their newest operating system, named Windows 10, has been ignorantly unethical at best and malicious at worst, wrote the petition organizer Todd Kleinpaste, who listed media accounts of the company's upgrade strategy. Reports everywhere state that people are being tricked or forced into upgrading to Windows 10 from their current preferred version of Windows. While Kleinpaste threw in a kitchen sink's worth of complaints, not just about the upgrade process, but also Windows 10's telemetry settings and Windows Store policies, the bulk of those signing the petition focused on Microsoft's attempts to get users to upgrade. Even before Windows 10's release in July 2015, Microsoft had been taking unprecedented steps to boost the new operating system's uptake, ranging from offering a free upgrade to planning the Get Windows 10 or GWX app on millions of Windows 7 and 8.1 systems. The GWX app initially let customers reserve a copy of the upgrade, but has mutated since then to preload the necessary files on PCs, replace itself if deleted, and most recently to schedule the upgrade by itself without any input from the end user.
And ignoring the X, I want to close this upgrade notice, and saying, oh, that means
right.
You want it.
Right. That scheduling has been the latest Microsoft maneuver to raise customers' hackles, notably because the notification assumes user approval when someone clicks that red X to close the frame. That interpretation, by the way, runs counter to decades of practice and Microsoft's own design guidelines. Because the free upgrade offer will expire on July 29th, many expect that Microsoft will stop dunning customers by disabling the GWX app. The company, however, has declined to confirm that. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is petition condemns Windows 10 upgrade practices. Your choices are about time, I'll sign, I'll think about it, big deal, I love Windows 10, everybody should upgrade, and you Windows people are funny. So far, you Windows people are funny is ahead, followed by about time, I'll sign. Only 24 of you voted so far, so please go to soundbites.org and do that. And while you're there, I know you'll have more to say about this. So if you slide down on the right there, scroll down to Fascinating Stuff. The first link is the forums. And when you get to the forums, the second link is the poll discussion. And so far, at least, the first item under poll discussion is 11 June 16 petition condemns Windows upgrade practices. And there are only two of us have so far actually posted in there. We'd love to have your opinion. And you can also, of course, always just give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
See, I'm worried they'll go the other step We've now upgraded you to Windows 10. Please insert your credit card number.
Yep.
Yeah, but there's been a number of computers I've heard folks from small businesses that had turnkey software.
And sometimes things won't work on a new system.
They came in and it just upgraded 7 computers overnight. And now all of a sudden their software wouldn't work. And it's like, what do we do? We didn't want this.
Yep. Listen, 7 is bad, but I've had people call me and say I've had hundreds.
Yeah.
Hundreds in my company overnight. What do I do? They're the tech support.
Yeah. Yep.
Isn't that the first screen that comes up, though? Do you want to roll back to Windows 7? And everyone ignores it.
Well, people don't
know
read,
what it means.
They don't
read
them.
Yeah,
they don't know what it means. They don't read them, and that's understandable. What would be great is if there was a – because you can do Microsoft policies, right? You can do – policies that work on every machine in an organization. There should be a policy to do rollback or a policy to not upgrade. But Microsoft doesn't seem to care about any of that. All they care about is being able to say we had 10 million people this month, upgrade 10 million people next month, 20 million people a month after that, whatever it is. And so that's where they stand, and that's the issue that they are solving for themselves. Because remember, Microsoft is a publicly traded company. Their customers are the shareholder. You're just the product they bring to those shareholders. And the shareholders are saying, we want everybody on Windows 10 because that's how we're going to make money going forward, by charging people for everything they do under Windows 10. So get everybody on Windows 10 so we can start making money.
And it makes it easier for developers to write programs to sell, because they don't have to put in 27 cases, you know, you're running this OS and this OS or this OS.
Right. So the shareholders love it. The developers mostly love it. And the end users are irrelevant.
Yeah, it's only those silly people that don't want
it. Microsoft
and they don't
does
count.
Not care. We simply do not matter. That's true for Microsoft and it's true for Apple. Their customers are their shareholders, not us. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Rich from Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Rich. What's up?
Hey, guys. Good afternoon on this great Saturday. Nick, this is a question for you. You had mentioned last week about KeePass having some kind of security hole. And I was just wondering if you had found another one that's a good migration so that I necessarily don't have to type in everything again for passwords and stuff like that.
Right. What I found here's, well, first let me back up a bit.
Okay.
What the problem with KeePass is that there is a known security hole, which the folks who run KeePass have said they are not going to fix. Because if they fix it, then that also cuts out the ads that run at the bottom.
Okay.
And for them, the income is more important than the security.
So a malicious ad can come through that way, too.
Right, and a malicious ad can come through that way, too.
So am I vulnerable, though, right now with all, you know, with my using my KeePass?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, you are, yes.
Okay.
What I have substituted, I looked at a few. What I have substituted right now is a program called EnPass, E-N-P-A-S-S. And Steve is going to look that up and put up a link.
Okay.
For that. I'm using EnPass. The thing I like about EnPass is that a couple of things. First,
neonatal pain, agitation, and sedation. EnPass.
Yes, E-N-P-A-S-S. all one word, E-N-P-A-S-S.
I didn't know there was a neonatal pain, agitation, and sedition scale.
Yes, it can't be sedition.
Sedation.
Sedation would be a whole other thing.
Yeah. Those darn infants are seditioning us. They're going to rise up.
That was Steve
I did
folks.
Not understand that one could conceal carry in the womb. Okay.
Yeah.
we're talking about E-N-P-A-S-S.
.io.
EnPass. .io, yeah.
Mac, Windows, and Linux.
And it's available on every platform. The thing I like about it is that it saves my database in a 256-bit encrypted form, so it depends entirely on how good your password is.
Okay.
In my Google Drive, so it's available to me on every one of my platforms.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah. It doesn't just do Google Drive. It does a whole bunch of others as well. It does Dropbox and it does iCloud and it does everything else.
Okay.
But I just happen to pick Google Drive.
Yeah, I've got that also.
Right. So the thing I don't like about it is that the versions that go on your phone, you have to pay for.
Okay.
But again, it's a one-time charge, and I figured I'd go for it and see how much I liked it. So far, I like it a lot.
Okay.
So far, I like it a lot. And so...
Now, is it like my first idea was, is it transferable for what you've already got entered,
do you
start again?
No, I was able to move all my KeePass data over to it.
Okay.
Now, what's weird is KeePass does something very odd, so there were some duplicates.
Okay.
Basically, what happens is every time you add to an entry, it saves it as a new entry. So let's say you put in your Soundbites password for the forums, right? And then you went back and said, oh, I forgot to say it's at soundbites.org. And then you went back a third time and said, I forgot to say that my username is Fred.
Okay.
Well, that's three entries in the KeePass database.
Okay.
So those all show up. One just has the password. One has the URL and password. And the third one has the URL and the name and the password.
So I just have to look for all my full information, if you will.
Right. And there's a thing that says, show me my duplicates.
Okay.
And so you go through them and find the one that has all the information and delete the others. It took me all of like 10 minutes, and I've got hundreds of entries. So that's the one I found so far. Right. I'm still looking around to see if there's anything better, but doggone it, so far I like this one. It doesn't work on Chromebooks yet, but it works on desktops and laptops and phones and everything else. So
the iOS version is free. There's a free version and a pro version for $10.
Right, the free version, there's a free version for Android as well, but it only gives you 10 or 20, I think it is, entries.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's just so you can show yourself that it works, and then you have to pay for it. I think it's $10 on Android.
And I don't use a lot of that on my phone, so it's more on my laptops and stuff like that. So, but I'm sure you'll keep us posted, but great. Thanks for the information, and I'll maybe work on getting that switched over today.
Okay, thanks, Rich.
All right, guys. Have a great one.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye.
Sometimes bugs that aren't fixed are because I don't want to say too hard, but they aren't that common, so it's not worth the time and effort of fixing them. I remember one in some of the early Mac days that if you try to print a purple ampersand on a black field on an ImageRouter LQ, your OS will crash.
Who even found
that? So who found that? And I remember reading the tech note that basically said, this is such an unlikely occurrence, we're not going to invest the time and manpower to figure out why and fix it.
Yeah.
And then probably a year later, they stopped making that printer anyway.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly.
So if anyone still has an ImageRouter LQ, that was the 27-pin impact printer.
Oh, there you go.
Instead of just 9 pins, it had 27. Right, 27. Letter quality.
I still have the Epson, track feed.
Oh, yeah.
It'll do 8.5 by 11.
Nice.
And it still works.
Yep.
Does anyone still
make pin feed paper?
Yeah, you probably
have cases of it in the basement, but.
Yeah, right. I still had a partial case of, from the business.
Yep.
When we used to do 3-part forms and everything else, and the printer still works.
Yep.
That's really what counts.
Yeah. I mean, back then, the Okidas and the Epson printers, the Impact
Okidatas,
printers.
Okidatas, you couldn't kill them with a bat.
Oh, yep. They were unbelievable.
It's like the HP LaserJet 4. It just ran and ran and ran and ran.
Yeah.
Every now and then we still run into someone using a LaserJet 4. PostScript version 1 or some ridiculous thing.
Yep. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Gabe the intern, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Gabe the intern.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Matt from South Buffalo on the line. Hiya, Matt. What's up?
Hey, what's good, Nick? My main question is this. I don't know if you guys are aware, but Time Warner is switching over to Charter One Communications, I believe.
Yeah, the new company's going to be called Spectrum.
Your guys' thoughts about that, like what's your feelings on that, and how would, you know, because I live in Buffalo and you guys got Time Warner also. We're not fortunate to have the good thing like you got there, Nick, the Greenlight Communications, but how will that affect me as a customer?
Well,
I just need some advice.
Yeah, no. Thanks. We actually, Steve...
go back to last week's show and listen to the first hour.
Yeah, right.
Two weeks ago when...
Phil was on,
he talked about...
That was 2 weeks ago, yeah. And the Apple Cider Users Group meeting last Wednesday, we had Phil talking about it, too.
Yeah, so we've talked about this a little bit, but basically what we know so far, and of course we don't know everything yet... Time Warner is going to change their name to Spectrum. Time Warner, Charter, and Bright House are combining, and they're going to change their name to Spectrum.
Yeah, I know that because I heard about Bright House. My father's got that down in Florida.
Yep.
Right, and Bright House is a fairly small one, but when you combine the three of them, they're going to be the second or third biggest cable company in the world. But basically, the idea is one of the nice things is the folks at Stop the Cap, and by that I basically mean Phil Dampier, has gotten some concessions from Time Warner. They're going to be doing upgrading. Now, I really know more about Rochester specifically, but I believe this is true of Western New York. The everyday low price system, which is currently 2 megabits down, 1 megabit up, will become 3 megabits down, 1 megabit up. The basic, which is 3 down, 1 up, will be 10 down, 1 up. Then there's standard and extreme and blah, 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 blah. Basically, if you get the highest end, the ultimate, which is 100 down and 5 up, becomes 300 down and 20 up.
Yeah, so your internet speeds are going to be increasing.
Like, sounds like a real good deal. Obviously, for the end user, it's like an upgrade. When they're coming in and they take over. I mean, am I right or wrong?
And this is sort of before the Spectrum branding actually comes online. So Time Warner is going to be increasing their speeds without increasing their rates. And Spectrum has said they're going to continue to increase their speeds over the next at least 7 years.
Oh, that sounds really nice. I mean, it's going to be different to see a change because obviously we've been living with Time Warner for, I mean, who knows how long in both Rochester and Buffalo. So, I mean, you know, I think that change is good no matter what. But, I mean, I hope they step up to the plate and really take over. I mean, it was good hearing from you guys, and I hope you guys have a nice weekend.
Thanks, you too. The other thing you should know is that Charter originally committed to not charge modem fees, to not impose usage caps, and to not use usage-based pricing and to respect net neutrality for 3 years. Phil and the folks at Stop the Cap lobbied state and federal regulators for a longer commitment, and the FCC ultimately extended that to 7 years. So for 7 years, there will be no modem fees, no usage caps, no usage-based pricing. Now, that doesn't mean that prices won't go up. It means they won't be based on usage. And so that's really nice. And so the folks at Stop the Cap, Phil Dampier, have done a great job watching out for us and for what we do. So it's still pretty good. It's going to be a pretty good deal once it's done and the speeds are up there. Now, the other thing to mention probably is that the FCC is investigating, of course, has been asked to investigate, and that's that the Time Warner cable speeds are terrible. I mean, terrible. No. terrible, one might say abysmal. Internet speed tests show that Time Warner Cable has repeatedly failed to provide the speed it promised customers, according to New York State government official. New York has not publicly released the data yet to back up the claim, but apparently shared the results with the cable company. On Wednesday, Charter, Time Warner Cable's new owner, received a letter demanding improvement from the New York Attorney General's office. New York Senior Enforcement Counsel Tim Wu wrote to Charter CEO Tom Rutledge and said, "We recently called on New York customers of major broadband providers to use open source tools to test the internet speeds they were experiencing. The results we received from Time Warner Cable customers were," and I quote, "abysmal. Not only did Time Warner fail to achieve the speeds its customers were promised and paid for, which Time Warner blamed on the testing method, it generally performed worse in this regard than other New York broadband providers." The Washington Post, rather, published the full letter and has a related article on that. Wu, by the way, is the fellow who coined the phrase network neutrality. Didn't cite specific numbers, but because he said the results were preliminary but troubling, and declined to make those numbers public. And Wu's letter also castigated Time Warner Cable for promising blazing fast and super reliable internet connections while providing substandard service.
So even though you're paying for 15, you might be getting 5.
Right. About 15% got between 80 and 95. 75% got more than 95. But generally, percent of the advertised speed. But 10% of them got less than 80% of the advertised speed during peak usage hours. Charter indicated it would make improvements to the networks of Time Warner Cable and Bright House. And so we'll see. Yeah. We'll see what that says.
Keep drinking the Kool-Aid.
That's exactly right.
And one of the crazy things that we have to remember here in Rochester is, as bad as we think Time Warner is, other companies are worse.
Better than Cox.
And the Comcast merger that was trying to go through last year, Comcast is by far the most hated cable company in the country.
Right.
They just, again, someone's house burned down in a fire, and the people were sent a $1,000 bill for the cable modem they can't return.
Right.
And too bad, that's not our fault. And, you know, give us our modem back, or you have to pay for it.
Right.
So hopefully the Charter merger will be better. Charter isn't as badly thought of as Comcast.
give them time.
Yeah. One of the things that is worrisome, and we have to thank Phil and the Stop the Cap folks for getting these concessions, is that Charter's general internet speed packages cost more than Time Warner's currently do. So one of the concessions is that they won't raise the rates yet. I think that was the 3-year to 7-year deal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so.
Well, I don't know. I don't think the rates are in the 7-year deal.
That was just the caps, wasn't
right.
it? Yeah. So it's possible the new Spectrum company will unify their rates. Spectrum does have on their own website some fairly misleading package deals where they talk about you can get 100, and so you got to read the fine print. So you get 125 TV channels, you get fast internet, you get unlimited calling for $29.99 a month each.
Oh, so channels are television is $30 a month, phone is $30 a month, internet is $30 a month.
Yeah,
nice
each, and then next to it, if you want more channels, it's $20
each. Yeah, nice,
nice. So it's fairly misleading. So that it eventually works out to that $80-$90 deal that Time Warner customers currently get as new subscribers, and that's always been part of the mess. And frustration is that new subscribers get these discounts and longtime subscribers don't. And so one of the things that that Phil has done on Stop the Cap is, I'll make a post of that one too. Just calling Time Warner and knowing the right questions to ask and being able to get your bill lowered, you can save up to $600 a year on your Time Warner cable bill.
Yeah. I have to say, Phil Dampier, amazing human being, and Stop the Cap has done yeoman's work getting us fairness and stuff like that from the cable companies. They've done a great job.
It's been 10 years, I think. He started when the local telco Frontier wanted to put a 5 gigabyte a month cap on internet services. And 5 gigs a month is one movie.
Yeah.
So you can watch one movie a month.
Yep.
And then nothing else. And so.
Yeah, and hope it's not a super long movie.
Yep.
Right.
And so that was where Stop the Cap was founded, and the grassroots efforts of Phil and the other people involved were able to get local senators to actually, they got a law passed in New York about not being able to do caps.
Yep.
So that bode well for consumers for the rest of the market.
Right. And he's taken that fight to Spectrum and done a great thing there as well. So we're very, very grateful to Phil for fighting the good fight for us. And we're all pretty happy that we're in the state where Stop the Cap is doing its best work. Although they're also doing that similar sort of thing in other states.
Yeah.
It's not just us, but...
He went to California to testify before their equivalent of a public service commission on the Comcast merger. And apparently all of the PR reps for the other cable companies know Phil and hate Phil.
Yeah.
Oh, not him again.
Exactly.
Yes, Phil is fighting for the common people. Yes, thank you, Phil.
Yeah, exactly. So that's good to know. So, Matt, are you still there? Matt, I think Matt hung up.
Hello?
Oh, yep, there he is.
No, it's Mark.
Mark.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh.
It's Mark from Greece.
Hi, Mark. What's up?
I just wanted to call and say a couple things, if I could. One thing is I saw the lovely and talented Dave Enright at Home Depot, and he gave me some help with a network cable interconnect to make a cable longer because I had the Ubuntu problem last week with the Wi-Fi, and I needed the internet connection to make the changes.
Right,
and I really didn't want to have to work off of a little TV table with my laptop, so. Yep. I extended the network cable, and I was able to do it on my dining room table, and it worked out wonderful. So thank you to Walter from last week for giving me...
talking about Synaptic Package Manager and B43 and all of that, yep.
It worked wonderful. It's up and running. As soon as I restarted the laptop, network came on.
Yay!
Cool.
So
yay, Walter. Yay, Mark.
Another thing I wanted to say is my brother recently moved to a townhouse and had to have Time Warner come out to, reconnect him. And was asking the installer about, because one TV was just going to have the cable line put straight into in a kitchen area. And she said, well, I don't mind doing that as long as you know that by December they're going to turn off the analog cable signal. And I said, oh, yeah, I said, I heard about that. They said it's to open up the bandwidth for the wire for the broadband.
Yeah.
And she goes, no, that's not it.
Yeah.
She said the FCC is making them turn it off because it interferes with aviation.
Yeah, among other things, one of the problems is if we could see the broadcast spectrum, we wouldn't be able to see anything because it is filled. It's
packed.
It's packed. And
upper and lower, because three sides to it.
Right.
Top, and so, middle, and bottom.
Right. And so one of the issues is the one that's used by aviation is very, very, very close to a couple of the analog stations. And of course, those were back in the day, they were given perpetual licenses for huge, big signals, right? I mean, in terms of strength. And now the government has been saying for the longest time, they've had to reroute planes around certain areas, et cetera, et cetera. So now by shutting down the analog, they will be able to actually free up spectrum, not free up more spectrum to use, but clear the aviation spectrum.
And it's similar to a few years ago when the analog broadcast station shut down and went to digital broadcast. If your TV does not have a cable box now, it will need one. And even if you do have a cable box, it might be an analog box, and you'll need to get a digital cable box.
Right.
Here in Rochester, Time Warner was giving those digital TV adapters initially for free, and then they started charging for them. And like every couple of years, the price went up and up and up. And so that's one of the things that you should check on your cable bill. Are you still paying for a digital TV adapter? Sometimes it's DTA. When you don't have one anymore, and if you can find it, return it and get your bill down. So the same thing now with the cable, analog cable shutting down, you may need to upgrade the tuner, basically, in your televisions to be able to get the analog cable.
Right.
If you're not already getting digital cable.
Is that signal's able to leak through the coax cable?
Well, mostly they're shutting it down for the broadcasting.
That's what I thought, because, you know, I kind of couldn't figure out how it was affecting aviation. If they're leaking signal through a coax cable, they've got some problems.
Right. No, it's not that, but what's happening, of course, is that Time Warner's jumping on that bandwagon to get rid of analog because it's just that much equipment they don't have to rebuy and upgrade and et cetera, et cetera.
Gotcha.
All right, we got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Gabe the Intern, and you. 41 minutes after the hour, Soundbites member, supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Gabe the Intern.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Patrick from Batavia, New York, on the line. What's up, Patrick?
Well, a couple things, Nick. Last week, I didn't listen to your show because I decided I've got... Well, I'll tell you why.
All right, we're hanging up on
it. I was embarrassed that I've listened for so long of you guys talking about Chromebook and the upgrade that I said, you know what, do it, and then go back and join them again. So I did.
Good for you.
I upgraded an old laptop that my daughter left after college, and I've now got the Chromebook running. It's very, very smooth, very neat.
Very nice.
But I discovered the reason that she left the laptop here is because the battery shot. What I'm looking at now, this is really my question. The replacement, I look in the online at Amazon, I can see anything from $17 to $35 to they've got a $57 one they call super high capacity. And then what are your thoughts on options for batteries? I mean, I know nobody's going to say our battery will be good for 2 months, you know.
Right.
What are your thoughts on how I would differentiate and which is a better buy for me?
Well, one of the,
I'm not asking for it.
I wouldn't go too cheap.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't go too expensive.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the middle. If you can find a battery from the original manufacturer, that's probably the best bet.
There's an online service called Battery Biz.
Okay.
And they used to be the best place as far as getting replacement batteries for laptops, whether it's Mac, PC, you know.
Yeah, it's a Toshiba. I'm not sure that matters.
Yeah, no. As long as you've got, you take the battery out and you got the model number on it, you can go, matter of fact, to Battery Biz, and you can put it in Toshiba, and they'll want the particular model number and, you know, that battery if they still have it available.
I've got the battery or model and the serial number, both.
Yep. Another place that you can also, if you don't want to go online in that, that can order it usually for you is a place called Goldcrest. Goldcrest is over on Goodman and Clinton near the Highland Diner.
Right.
I've gone to him a number of times to get unique batteries that he can have custom made up. But check out Battery Biz first.
There's also Battery Plus in the Henrietta Plaza off of Henrietta Road.
But be assured that if it's that old, 10 to 1 odds it's going to have to be ordered.
Yeah.
It's not something they're going to stock. There's just no way they can have all the batteries on hand.
Which may be a good reason to buy it locally, because then you've got someone to go back to if there's a problem.
Well, again, Battery Biz, I did have good luck with them. That's the only reason I'm touting them, because I did have one that only lasted a couple months. The customer came back to me. I gave them a call. I said, send it back. We'll send you another one.
Okay.
And they were great about it. So I will give them kudos on that.
All right, thank you. And another quick question. When my original Kindle, there was a selection where I could have it read out loud. And I now have also have a Kindle Fire. And I don't see any option like that with the Kindle Fire. I do see some, what do you call it? There are apps that do read it. Has it changed that much with the Kindle Fire, do you know?
There was a big mess with the Actors and Authors Union, wasn't it?
Yep.
I heard about that.
They didn't want the book to be able to read itself because you're supposed to hire an actor to read it.
Right.
Which, the computer reading books were pretty terrible and monotone.
Yeah, the voice was very choppy.
I can tell you this. My wife is legally blind, so she gets a lot of books, and they're professionally narrated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if anybody has ever heard the difference between them, it is remarkable.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you get people who do all the voices.
All the
books
that come in should come through you, like every store wants everybody to only to shop with them, but there's no comparison between a computer-read book and something that's done really well.
Will Wheaton did a really good blog entry on it, comparing the computer-read and actual performance-read, and it was just amazing.
Yep. But what's happened is you can still get them, but they're now... who is it? Is it the Gutenberg? At Gutenberg.org? Gutenberg.
But in the Kindle Fire, I'm finding an article, the Fire tablet, you have to go under additional settings to be able to turn on text to speech.
Additional settings.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll get there.
Project Gutenberg used to have, and I'm not there yet, but it used to have a whole section on volunteer read books, as well as volunteer proofread books. Most of them are public domain books, so they have a whole section on audiobooks, both human read and computer generated. So you get things like all of the Arthur Conan Doyle books, and you know things that are now in the Charles Dickens, anything that's in public domain.
So it's just kind of funny that the old machine seems to continue to read my new books that I get, but the new machine is going to have issues for the reasons you just mentioned.
Right. So, as Steve said, go deep in and see if you can turn that on. It might just be an option that they turned off to make the voice actors happy.
Okay, will do. And now I can come to your Rochester Googles with my head held high.
There you go.
Because I'm actually using my Chromebook. So.
We'll look forward to seeing you. It's the first Thursday of every month.
Thanks for mentioning that, Nick. Appreciate that.
Thanks, Patrick. We meet the first Thursday of every month at St. John's Meadows in the Briarwood Building. It's a good group of people, and we have a lot of fun every month.
I was planning on coming to the last meeting and forgot about it. And I got home, sat in my chair, had my drink in my hand, and my alarm went off. Rochester Googles is now.
God.
You can usually set those to go off early.
It didn't give me a warning.
Your timing.
Yeah, right.
If I didn't have the drink in my hand, I might have got up.
Bring the drink. We don't care.
Bring it. Yeah. Put it in
Do you remember RAMS, the Rochester Area Microcomputer Society? We met at the German Club.
Yeah.
Oh, that had to be interesting.
And to get to the room, you had to go past the bar.
Yep.
Many of us often didn't make it past the bar. We certainly didn't make it past the bar in one shot.
Yeah.
Well, nowadays, I go to the RAMS meetings, and that's the Rochester Aero Modeling Society.
Right.
Going back to the Chromebook, so I did have one caller this week. He called me because he had a Chromebook, relatively new. Matter of fact, he only got it, I think he said, in April. And the screen's gone black. He wanted to know if he could bring it over and have me take a look at it. I go, that's the whole thing with the Chromebook. I says, one, it hasn't been a year. So you've got to actually go back to where you bought it. They should, because he bought it online, honor a one-year
warranty.
At least that. He says, well, I got a real good deal on it. I says, still in all, you should still get some type of warranty with it because that's the whole problem. It's not like a desktop that you can pull out a video card and throw in another one. This is all built onto the motherboard. Chromebooks are very small, very thin. Everything is solid state.
And that makes it very cheap.
Yes. And that's why you only pay, like for me, my 15-inch Chromebook was only $250.
And then
they're disposable. Yep, like you said,
they become disposable.
As yeah. Nick has said, you know, if he happens to lose it, oh well, no big deal because you're only out that small amount, as opposed to, you know, an expensive laptop that you've put out, you know, over $2,000 because it's got this fast video and the DVD player and all this other whiz bang stuff. Yep. Chromebooks are cheap; they're disposable, folks.
Yep.
Unfortunately, any cost of repair is going to exceed the value of the
I don't
commute.
Know if you could, yeah. because there is so much surface-mounted yep. stuff. There's no way I don't even yeah. want to try it. So there's nothing you can do for
you'd
it.
You'd have to replace the whole logic board to fix a video problem.
You might as well just get a whole yeah. nother Chromebook.
That's going to cost more than buying yeah. a new Chromebook.
Because, again, trying to find that particular model circuit board, our motherboard, it's essentially a motherboard because, and it's going to be expensive because even though it's just the video,
right?
The RAM is on there, the hard drive, everything is mounted there on the motherboard.
Yep.
There are no separate components that can slide this part out and slide that part out in. Right.
It depends on the model, but mostly you're absolutely correct. Yeah. And so the big thing is definitely make sure that you have a warranty.
Yes.
And honestly, this is the first time I've heard of this problem on a Chromebook. But any hardware can have any kind of problem.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean, it's,
that's obvious.
The laws of probability, you know, right. my luck. It's just,
right.
Word yep. for bad luck, I'd have no luck at all sometimes.
Exactly. But have it. Happens. But check it out. Make sure that you haven't switched video to another
mm-hmm.
output. If you know, see, because you can do like you can with regular laptop, you can have it show on the built-in screen or an external screen or both.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have somehow switched it to an external screen, you'd have to plug in a screen in order to get it back again.
Yeah.
And make sure you haven't turned the brightness down, of course, because there's a button right on the keyboard to do that. But once you've done that, then it really becomes a matter of make sure you got a warranty so you can get it fixed. So, yeah, absolutely.
Like I say, I didn't want to play around with it as far as, you know, taking it apart or anything
no,
else.
No, you don't.
Because he says, you know, he tried everything and, you know, he was using it, shut it down like he always does normally, went to boot it back up the next morning because it is so fast.
Yeah.
Nothing.
And even probably not even worth the diagnostic fee that most companies would have yeah. to charge you, too.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's better to, you know, get a hold of the manufacturer or whoever you bought it from.
It's almost sad we've become such a disposable society.
Right.
So make sure you recycle that computer properly with an electronics recycling company.
Right.
Yeah.
One of the big things, that, of course, is that these are portable. These are our laptops. So you're going to be carrying them around, banging them around, dropping them in the trunk of the car. You know, that stuff happens to them. I always tell people who are buying a portable computer, make sure you get an extra warranty, at least a 2-year, if not a 3-year warranty, because no matter how cheap the thing is, unless you really are going to throw it away and just buy a new one, you know, if something happens, you're going to want to fix it. So. It's an issue that we need to be aware of. We carry around our phones and we carry around our tablets and we carry around our laptops. We carry around our watches
mm-hmm.
and, having all of those things with an extended warranty, is actually a very good idea. You know, your desktop, maybe not so much, but for the others, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, more than a year is better. You know, mm-hmm. one of my Chromebooks is, what, 4 years old now?
And that's the other thing about it. Since there's so few moving parts in it, there's less to break.
Yeah.
But it's the heating and cooling cycles, the expansion right. mm-hmm. and contraction of the components
and
that wears
again,
them out.
Like you say,
that's why we say don't leave them on all the time, because they'll heat up and wear out.
Right.
Don't turn them on and off too much, because they'll heat up and cool cool down and wear out too much.
Yeah.
Yep. So just catch never use it, and it will last forever.
You're right.
Actually, no. You leave it in the closet for 6 months, pull it out, it's dead. Why? I haven't touched it.
The battery's gone.
Yeah.
We see that far too often, actually. Yep. That's So I tend to use mine fairly regularly. This one comes out at least once a week when I come to the show, now that I'm doing most of my stuff from home. But I'll tell you, this opens every day, goes, you know. What I normally do is I start it up in the morning, Saturday morning,
mm-hmm.
Make sure it's fully charged and do an update, see if there's any updates. We're up to 51, which is the one that theoretically will work with Android apps, but they're not. The flags are either shut down or not available on this particular model. We can't see them yet. We can't play with them yet, but beta channel can. And so we're just that one step closer to being able to run Android apps on your Chromebook. Not a bad idea to get a touch screen for that. If you're looking to get a Chromebook, think about spending a little more money and getting a touch screen and at least 4 gig of RAM so that you're ready to do things like Android apps and stuff like that. I just helped our friend Art Trimble buy a new Chromebook. It's an Asus Flip. Very cool little toy. All right. That music tells us that we have wasted an entire hour of our lives with this nonsense. Despair not, for you will get the chance to do it again on the other side. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Gabe the Intern, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. For no discernible reason, you continue to listen to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMCJazz901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Okay.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Gabe the Intern.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. In the known universe. Nerds in space.
Well, I
don't know where I am today.
I had another...
Whatever you're on, can I have some?
Yeah, really.
Antibiotics. My cats have... My kittens have clawed up my legs.
Oh, it's cat scratch fever.
Yeah. Exactly. It's cat scratch fever, baby.
Get Nuge. Play some Nuge.
All right. Well, back to the phones. We have Dave from Henrietta, New York on the line. Hiya, Dave. What's up?
Hi. I've got another Windows upgrade question.
Oh, yeah. Good luck.
Yeah. I have a desktop, and I'm running... Eudora email, and I've thought in the past about upgrading from Eudora to Thunderbird, and now that I'm faced with doing the Windows 10 upgrade, I'm wondering about doing that, whether I should do a Eudora to Thunderbird upgrade before I do the Windows 10 upgrade. I've checked online, and there seems to be some issues regarding Eudora directly onto Windows 10. But I also see some problems about upgrading from Eudora to Thunderbird. So I'm just wondering what your thoughts would be on that.
Were it me, who was going to do this, I would move from Eudora to Thunderbird first. And then the first thing I would do, of course, is back up all my data in Eudora.
Right.
Then do the upgrade to Thunderbird, then do the upgrade to Windows 10.
Okay. All right.
That's the order I would do it in personally, just because I think you're right. There are some problems with Thunderbird and Windows 10, but I haven't experienced that. And not with Windows 10, with upgrading from Eudora, I mean. I have not experienced them. Of course, I've got all my mail doing IMAP, not POP.
Okay.
With POP email, all the email is downloaded from the server to your computer. So the only place the email resides is in your computer.
Okay.
In IMAP, the mail stays up on the server so that whether I look at it from my desktop or my laptop or my phone, I'm seeing all the same mail.
And if you delete it on one, it deletes it on the others.
Right.
With the old POP format, you get 1,000 messages on your phone, you have to delete them one by one. You get the same 1,000 messages on your tablet, you got to delete them one by one. Get the same 1,000 messages on your computer, you got to delete them one by one. So okay. IMAP synchronizes between your devices.
Okay. All right.
So if you're doing...
How about the upgrade or the change from Eudora to Thunderbird? Does that go smooth or...
Well, like I said, it went smoothly for me, but again, I'm all on IMAP.
Okay.
So all the emails are actually residing at the server end, and I'm just pointing to them.
Oh, okay.
So
all
for
right.
me,
okay.
the Thunderbird
well, I've only got
upgrade.
The one, I'm on just the one device, so that hasn't been an issue yeah. for me.
Right.
What version of Eudora are you running? Are you running the newest Eudora OSE?
Yeah, I have 7.109.
I think that's an older one. So Qualcomm shut down Eudora in 2006.
Right.
Mozilla took over and made the Eudora open source edition. And it looks like they are no longer running that either and suggesting people go to Thunderbird, which is also from Mozilla.
Oh, okay. Okay, I was thinking 7.1 was the newer version.
Yeah, no, it is not the newest. I think it is not the newest version.
Because they have something in the Eudora OSE called the Power Importer that allows you to... get your contacts and email and personalities and everything imported properly.
That's on Eudora's?
Eudora OSE, the open source edition.
Okay. So I should do that first then before I do the Thunderbird upgrade?
Well, Thunderbird should read from the original Eudora itself as well.
Yeah, it should. Oh. The first thing I would do is export all of my mail and all of my contacts to text files, CSV, whatever format you like. I don't really care.
Okay.
And then make a backup of those. So if something does go drastically wrong, you've still got everything.
Okay. All right.
Then I would do I would install Thunderbird and do that transfer from Eudora to Thunderbird. Make sure that's worked correctly. Make sure you've got the latest version of Thunderbird. And once you've done that, then if you want, and I would suggest this as well, see if you can do IMAP on your email server, your email provider, rather than POP3, which also means that you've just taken the whole problem away from yourself.
Okay.
And then upgrading to Windows 10 would be easier.
What email service do you use?
How do you mean service?
Well, who's your provider?
Who do you get email from?
Time Warner.
I'm on Time Warner.
Okay.
Yeah. So your email address ends in rr.com?
Right.
Yeah. There's a annoying problem. Roadrunner does not support IMAP.
Yeah.
But Time Warner does. So if you change your server from the pop-server.rochester.org.com that it is now, set up a new account at mail.twc.com, you can still use your Roadrunner email address, but you can also then use the IMAP service on that email.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Now, I will also say, by the way, that Eudora 7.1.0.9 seems to work just fine for most people in Windows 10. Yeah.
Most.
I realize that's damning with faint praise. So, again, I would not necessarily take the risk.
Okay. All right. Okay.
All right.
I thank you very much. You guys do a great job. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Have fun.
Sorry about that before. I didn't realize my mic was on.
Yeah.
And I was trying to explain some stuff here to our intern.
Our intern.
Yeah, slowly.
Ooh. Kind of amazing, actually.
We got an intern.
So far, he's doing a great job.
Yeah.
Last week, he held that chair down amazingly. This week, we actually let him touch a button and nothing blew up. I'm very impressed so far. We'll see. We'll see how you do tomorrow. Good job today. I may well kill you tomorrow.
Won't leave him in the closet as long?
We won't leave him. We'll poke a couple air holes in the door this week.
Okay.
That'll be good. in terms of mail, one of the things that I tend to suggest also is that you get a mail service that is not attached to your internet service provider. For example, Gmail or even Yahoo Mail. And the reason for that is it gives you flexibility in changing your service provider. So if you move or Time Warner changes to Spectrum or Greenlight comes into your neighborhood, instead of getting mail from them, you get mail your mail through somebody like Gmail. You'll never have to change it again.
And that's one of the unanswered questions is, will your Roadrunner email address change with Spectrum? And we don't know yet.
Right, we don't know yet. We suspect eventually it will. But
they could easily keep the mail servers and keep that name. But
they might, it's to avoid a big hassle. I mean,
for a while, probably.
Yeah, well, probably for a good while because people don't, just accepting.
On the other hand, there will be a corporate push to rename and rebrand.
Yeah. True.
So we'll see. But
probably new customers will get a Spectrum.
Yeah, I bet you.
Right.
I bet you. Because they're going to have to make it easy for the folks to make the transition. Because a lot of folks don't know where to go in and change their email because it's like a few of our callers have said, they've had it for decades.
Yep. At least it's shorter than rochester.rr.com. It could have been rochester.rr.com. You know, Syracuse has got STNY. Central New York, and so some of the other Roadrunner areas have shorter domain names, but we've got rochester.ir.com. It's annoying to type every
time. Oops.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. A couple weeks ago, I did a presentation on office trips and tips and tricks.
Yeah.
Someone asked me a question I couldn't answer. I said, I'll get back to you. I still can't answer it. So, here we go. This is 2013 Word. I'm presuming it's the same in 16 and 10. I don't know.
A little bit. Yeah, it's mostly the same, yeah.
Yeah.
If you right-click over any Word in Office, in Word,
yeah,
you get a content menu.
Right.
This person wanted to modify the content menu, change what's up there.
Nope.
And that's, I'm thinking it's got to be in the registry someplace.
No, that'd be
within Windows.
That'd be in the programming code.
Yeah, of Windows. Okay. Microsoft Word, yes. I'm sorry. Yes. So
they have to code what happens when you click, right-click.
Yeah.
And there's... Then when you right-click on one thing, you get one list. When you right-click on something else, you get other lists. So all that's hard.
Those are different in programming. That's different procedures depending on where you're doing. And to modify a procedure, you would have to get in there and they're not going to let you.
Yeah. You'd need the source code and recompile it.
Recompile
it. It may well be that they're just XML files somewhere deep in the system. But I honestly wouldn't know.
Where to begin to look.
Necessarily where you are, exactly. The Microsoft, hold on a minute.
Yeah, because you can get in the registry, and that changes things within Windows.
Right, I understand. It's not going to be registry. It's going to be the Office program.
And, even though it's Microsoft, they don't give you the same capabilities for the operating system as they do the actual programs like Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and all that, is my from what I can remember.
Well, that would explain why I couldn't find anything to do it with.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right. You can customize the ribbon.
Right. That's actually what I was talking about. I was showing them how to customize the quick access bar.
Right.
And then someone said, well, how do I customize the...
Yeah, no, it's easy. It's not easy, but it's possible to do with Windows itself, and it's possible to do on Linux. I've done it regularly, but I don't know that it is doable on Word specifically.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Sorry.
Okay. Quick thing about the name. I've actually started moving everything off of Roadrunner, but I've had a Hotmail account for years. Microsoft doesn't really let you use Hotmail anymore.
Right.
But I can still use my Hotmail account, so at least Microsoft is keeping it for
a little while.
Yeah, they're using Outlook.com now as their most recent.
Right.
Yeah. So, but I had been making my move for a couple months away from Roadrunner.
There you go. It is, you know, just in terms of mail and everything else, the companies like Google who have their Gmail system, have done a much, much better job of making IMAP available, making it available on every platform, making it easy to back up. One of the lovely things about Gmail is that it's part of Google Takeout, which I believe is just a takeout.google.com. And from there... .com. I think that's it. Maybe it's google.com/takeout. Yeah, it's at myaccount.google.com. Right, right, right. And one of the things you can do is take away everything you want. Download all your stuff. They believe that your stuff is your stuff and that you should be able to download it all anytime you want. I like the old name, the Data Liberation Front. And so every once in a while, I go in and download my data. So all my mail can come down as a zip file, all my pictures, all my, if I wanted to, all my Google Plus posts.
Yeah.
All of that stuff I can download and keep copies of. So, you know, if you worry that Google's going to lose your stuff, you can do that very, very easily there. That's one of the things that I very much like about Gmail.
Yep. Yeah. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. I'm glad it wasn't me who couldn't find it. I'm glad it doesn't exist.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Thank you.
Yep, Burr, have fun. Yeah, I'm looking down the list here. It is at takeout.google.com. And it's... Your Google Plus, Blogger, your bookmarks, calendar, contacts, Drive, Fit, photos, play books, your books, pretty much everything. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Gabe the Intern, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Jay Benright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Gabe the Intern.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we have Mark from Rochester, New York on the line. Welcome, Mark. What's up?
Hey, thanks very much. Nice to talk to you guys. Love the show.
Thanks.
Having a problem with my iMac. I just can't figure out. I can get to secure websites that start with HTTPS, but I can't get to anywhere else. My email's working fine. I have a valid IP on both Ethernet and Wi-Fi. I've had some networking problems. It's kind of convoluted, but I got everything working again, but I can't get on the Internet.
Which browser are you using?
All three. I've tried Chrome, Safari, and Firefox. I'm on Yosemite 10.5.5. It's about a five-year-old iMac with 4 megs of RAM. I got about 500, at least half of my hard drive is empty. I got a terabyte hard drive. And I was having major problems. I lost my Internet connection via Ethernet, but still had Wi-Fi. And talked to Time Warner Cable and ended up bridging the Time Warner Cable and unbridging the Airport Extreme. And everything came back and worked, and I got valid IP addresses. But the iMac is incredibly slow, but I am getting mail, and I can connect to sites like at RIT, but nowhere else.
Have you tried connecting the computer directly to the Time Warner modem and removing your wireless router completely?
Yes, I have, and that works fine.
Yeah, it's probably something is dying in the router. We've seen something similar to that. Ironically, we had a customer who couldn't get to Time Warner Mail, but could get to every other website, could get to other Time Warner websites, but the mail.twc.com just would not work.
Well, that's what I thought last week, and we're weird. Thinking alike. So I went out, got rid of the 8-port TP-Link router that I have in my house, and replaced it with Ethernet with a Netgear router, and hooked all that up, and nothing was working until I had Time Warner unbridge the cable modem, and I went in with Airport Utility on my laptop and bridged the Airport Extreme, and everything came back up and was working. And I just sat at my computer to try to get on the internet, and I can't get on.
Hmm. Have you installed anything like HTTPS everywhere? There are programs you can install that forces your browser to always use a secure connection, which is good in the long run, but there are some sites that don't offer secure connections.
Right.
All right.
Well, you know, somebody told me it has something to do with my system preferences settings under Ethernet, and then go to where it says proxies, and in the box there, it says bypass proxy settings for these hosts and domains, and he told me to delete what was in there, which I did.
You shouldn't be using any proxy settings.
Yeah, it did say *.local,*.254/16.
Yeah,
and I deleted that.
Yeah, that's fairly normal.
Okay.
If everything works properly when you bypass the Airport Extreme, and things...
That's right. I hooked up my laptop directly to both the Time Warner cable and the 8-port router and got on the internet via Ethernet just fine.
Yep. And what it sounds like to me is that the Airport Extreme is dying.
Year old.
Go ahead.
It's only 1 year old.
Well, if it's less than a year, it's still under warranty. If you bought an extended warranty with the computer and the router, then you can get it under extended warranty.
Right. But if it doesn't work with it and it does work without it, then it's the problem.
Yeah.
Clearly. What can happen is there's a table of information that the router keeps inside itself. It's one thing that makes it a router. If the RAM that is holding that is dying, then you will get weird results or no result when you try to use that particular entry. So it is possible that the RAM inside your Airport Extreme is dying.
You can also try a factory reset, which completely erases all the settings and set everything up new again.
Is that the little tiny pinhole in the back of it?
You can do it that way, too. You can also do it in the Airport Utility.
Okay.
If you can still access the router through the Airport Utility.
It sees it right away.
Yeah, one of the commands is a factory reset.
And that may help, because if there is an issue with a bit of RAM, resetting it may make the modem see that problem and route around it.
And the other thing in that proxy setting, having that bypass local isn't as bad a problem. But if anything is checked on in that setting, especially the HTTP proxy, so everything under proxy should be unchecked in your computer as well.
There's only one thing checked that says at the bottom in the center, use passive FTP mode. PASV.
Yeah, that's okay. You're not doing any FTP anyway.
Okay.
The protocols
unchecked in the proxy setting.
Yeah. Okay. So that's good.
Okay.
Yeah. All so right. I would well. Say start. I mean, certainly it's a few minutes work to reset it up again, right? But I would start with just doing a reset of your airport, because that's the cheapest fix if it works.
Right. Yeah. Well, seeing as I just went out and bought a new switch, I guess. The next best thing to try. Is it easy to reset the Airport Extreme? I haven't done that myself.
Yeah, in Airport Utility, once you log into the router, it's in one of the menus.
Okay.
I don't remember which one. But yeah, the other way is you hold the paperclip into the hole while you're booting it, so you need three hands.
Yeah.
Yeah, do it carefully.
So if the
you got to hit that center
of
that button.
And if you push it too hard, you can break the switch off on the inside. So if you can get into it with airport utility, it's a lot easier.
It's safer.
That sounds great.
That sounds great.
There you go.
Yep, no problem.
I got my afternoon cut out for me.
There you go. Have fun.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Sure. What better thing to do on an afternoon like this anyway?
Yeah.
Although it's up to 81.
That was the craziest thing when we had this customer that he could not get to the Frontier email server.
Yeah.
Every other page worked fine. So what in his router would stop one request? Every other request worked.
What would happen is having corrupted entry.
Yeah.
Right? And then so it's trying to go to a website that doesn't exist or whatever. Or it thinks it's bad.
Yeah.
Or thinks it's been blocked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. It got somehow, in other words, thinks that it's blocked because if everything else working.
Right. So let's say, you know, because the airport has the ability to do parental controls, right?
Not in the airport itself. In the computer, it does.
Oh, in the computer. Mm. All right. But it's still, you know, that's the place I'd start. If it works without it and it doesn't work with it, then that's the issue.
Yeah.
So,
and you know, just because it's new, that doesn't mean anything. We, like any other electronic component, they can fail. Whether they're a year old, 2 days old.
Generally,
I've had them fail even out of the box.
Yeah, they'll
sometimes.
Fail out of the box over the last 10 years.
Right.
But anytime in the middle, they can fail too.
Yeah. Right, because that's what we say. The mean time between failures is 5 years. But that means that some last 10 years, some die out of the box, and everything else is somewhere in between. And so you can't say just because it's new, it's going to work. That's why there are warranties. And that's why you can buy an extended warranty. My daughter is, paying $7 a month for full replacement warranty on her phone, which at first I thought, geez and crackers, there's a waste of money. She replaced her phone 4 times. She keeps dropping it because she carries it everywhere.
Tell her to take better care of her stuff.
Well, yeah, exactly. But you know what? It works.
Yeah, especially a phone that slips out of your pocket.
Right.
And all the trend these days of having really, really thin phones, they end up being slippery. They're glass fronts on them, so they're easier to slip out of your hands.
Right.
So then you put a case on it to protect it, and then it's not thin anymore.
Yeah,
right.
Although, I mean, I've got this one case on mine, and I'm glad I do because I've dropped it a few times.
Yeah, it's a grippy rubber.
Yeah, it's a
which means you can't slide it into your pocket so easy.
It also means it can't fall out of your pocket so easy.
Yeah, no, I mean,
and you butt dial more. No.
Right. No, I haven't
How can you butt dial when you have to swipe and then tap?
Yeah, my wife does it all the time. She takes pictures of the inside of her pocket.
Yeah, so that means you got to swipe up and tap the camera. She's got a marvelous butt.
I've always thought so.
I was going to say, you better watch out. You're sitting next to her.
That's a lot of muscle control.
Okay, we'll go back to the phones now. Our next caller is Richard from Arondacoit, New York. Hi, Richard. What's up?
How's your butt control,
Richard? Hi.
What can we do for you?
Hi. Can we back up an hour to MPass?
Yeah.
That replaces like Dashlane and LastPass. It does the same stuff, right?
Yeah, it's the same stuff. It does all the same things. Yeah. Yeah, it does all the same stuff.
I'm sorry?
It does all the same stuff that those do.
Okay. Is there a way to log into it without me having to enter my primary password?
Nope.
Does that negate it all?
Yeah. The whole point behind this is it's supposed to be secure.
Yeah.
So you pick a really, really good password for the product itself.
Right.
Because that's how that password is part of the seed for creating the 256-bit hash.
I understand.
Okay. So you want a decent password for that, and it'll complain if you pick a bad one.
Right. So then all of these I'll use the generic LastPass issues do require you to enter your primary password every time you wish to use that service.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
In fact, if you find one that doesn't, don't use it. It's junk.
Right. I hear you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep. Bye-bye.
So one of the most common threat issues we've seen is you're at a coffee shop and you walk up to get a refill.
Yep.
Someone sits down at your computer for that 10 seconds. They can make a username that they know. They can open, you know, open screen sharing. Mm-hmm. They can copy your files because you just left it open.
Yeah.
So requiring that password to be typed, shortening the amount of time your screensaver takes to turn on so that you have to type a password, especially on a laptop that you carry around.
Yep.
And, yeah, you step up and, you know, get up and walk away for a few minutes. You'd be surprised at what people can do in just, you know, 20, 30 seconds while you're up at the register.
Right. And so one of the nice things about that I like about EnPass is it saves everything on Google Drive. So it's available to, you know, I put in a password at my desk. It's immediately available on my phone. Because it's on Google Drive, it's already encrypted before it goes to Google Drive.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's on Google Drive, it's a secure connection.
Right.
So even if I'm out somewhere and pulling it down on my laptop or whatever, it's still encrypted.
And the other point that, like Steve said, and the likelihood of, you know, somebody sitting there, like you say, can happen. But the other scary thing is they've got these devices out there, folks. They're no bigger than a tablet. And they could walk by your machine, credit cards, and everything else to just be near you and suck all that information in. Because, you know, you don't have a protected credit cards and all that other stuff. They come now, you know, with those chips and everything else. Yeah, they've got these cases that you're supposed to put your credit card in, because all they have to do is come within a foot or two and just be standing there. You could be standing, like you say, in line for coffee, and boom. Gather all your information. It could be passwords, everything else. But by using that encryption, that makes, now they got to have a code to get into that. And that's not there. And that's just in your head.
Right.
And that one gets you into the rest.
Right. And that encryption also means that 256-bit encryption is AES encryption is pretty high end. And so it would take them a very long time to break into it. And the reality is they'll actually go to somebody else and leave yours alone rather than,
yeah, I mean, they don't have a lifetime to, you right. know, is, right. you really would have to be someone important, I would think.
Right. People are annoyed by passwords, and mm-hmm. that confuses me, because frankly, my opinion is every time I see a password,
mm-hmm.
I think, good, this is better protected.
Mm. Yep.
And when I have two-factor authentication and I have to go to my phone, rather than thinking, crap, got to go to my phone again,
yep.
I think, good, this is more protected.
Mm-hmm.
And some people say, I don't have anything worth stealing. Well, you've got an identity
yeah.
where people can run up, get new
Open
credit
up
cards.
Credit cards and everything
you've
else.
You've got credit cards they can use. You've got bank accounts they can access. Or you can just be the patsy that they attack someone else with.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the police come to you because that's where the signal ended.
Yep.
Right.
And, all right, so, you know, is the credit card company, the $50, you know, liability limitation that they waive most of the time. So the guy, you know, the bad guy does it to a million people. Unsuspecting, regular people who have nothing worth stealing. But you do it a million times, you do it 2 million times. That's a ton of money for the bad guys to make.
Yep. Yep.
And so it doesn't have to be a rich, we call a target-rich environment, that you don't have to be anybody important. Your identity can be stolen very, very easily, and it's, you know, worth a few $1,000s to someone.
Right. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Gabe the intern, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported. Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Gabe the intern.
Oh, right. Sorry. And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
He's a rookie. He's in training stuff.
I'm in training. I can't help it. You're only an intern. We don't care.
He's doing a pretty good job.
He's doing a great job, actually. Always good to have a good intern. And
there's a band called Sasquatch on Mars.
Of course there is. Of course there is. Sasquatch Skull on Mars, which
yeah,
you're looking
find
for.
That one, yeah. Since the face on Mars has been debunked.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
We were just talking during the break about all the people and their what do we call it? Idiot science. And one of the pictures shows a big rock, and people are saying it's a Sasquatch skull. On Mars.
See, I was still back into our previous conversation before that, how you butt dial on a new phone, because, like I say, remember mine?
When part I had of it that, is she doesn't turn off the screen.
Yeah, but remember on mine, though, a number of times when that one, I'd butt dial like crazy.
Yeah.
Any of the newer phones, like Steve said, you got to hit the button and slide it. It's like, well, that's a talent.
Yeah, it's a talent. It's a talent.
Just weird things to think of. But
luckily, my wife is at market, but somebody's telling her right now. You know what I heard on the way here?
I have a spare room.
I may well need it, and it's your fault, by the way.
No, I just said I find it interesting how you do that. That's a talent. Well, because
if you don't turn off the phone,
okay,
right, so the screen is still on, and on an Android phone, you can scrape up either the phone or the camera, right from the black blank.
Hers
from
doesn't
the start
time
screen.
Out though. Real quick.
Well, she had it set to 2 minutes. Now it's set to 30 seconds.
But your pants shouldn't have capacitance to control the screen.
but putting it in your pocket, you push run your hand over the thing. So that happens. And so, I used to get people. You used to butt dial me all the time.
Yes,
your old phone.
Oh, that old phone was a pain in the butt. Well, not only you, many
in
of
my
other,
butt. As a matter of fact,
a lot of other folks. The last person that I called, it would sit there and dial them. They go,
"Yep."
Well, I knew you were there because I could hear you talking. But the phone was in my back pocket, and I didn't have a clue.
What we need is a butt dial button, so that if you butt dial me, I can push the button. And you get this piercing tone that says, "You idiot! You butt dialed somebody."
Commercial.
Yeah, zap them.
Yeah, like that little charge.
Knowing you, you'd have it. You turn it on all the time.
Yeah.
All right. Our next caller is Ray from Pittsford, New York. Hi, Ray. What's up?
Hi. I have two quick questions. One is, I think that is LastPass susceptible to this problem, just like KeyPass is?
No, it is not. It is strictly, it's KeyPass, and it's the one, and KeyPass, of course, is the one I've been using for 10 years.
Okay, that takes care of that one. The second one is Chromebook. A quick comment on Chromebook.
Yep.
What do you really need to get that to work? I mean, somehow you have to be hooked up to the internet, right?
Yeah. Yes and no. Not all the time. I have taken my Chromebook places where there is no internet connection and written whole chapters in my book. So you don't, but as with anything, it is, if you're doing stuff on the web, you really should have an internet connection. Yes.
Yes, of course.
But one nice thing about the Chromebook is you can set it up, so that when you are connected, it synchronizes your laptop, your Chromebook, and your Google Drive, so that when, not everything, but the last 100 things you did or whatever. So if I start a new document or I open up a document that I've been using recently, it's available to me. I can do anything I want with it, except I guess look up definitions on the web, obviously, if you have no network connection. And then when I go back to where there is a network connection, it automatically syncs it again.
Well, does when you're working not connected, does it have the capability of having embedded programs then?
No, because those are all out on the web. What do you mean by embedded? Wait, what do you mean by embedded programs?
Well, you said you could, I don't know, you could write a chapter of your book, I think you said, if you weren't connected to the internet.
Right.
How do you do that?
Oh, you just bring up, you just double-click on the document.
Google Docs.
On Google Docs. If you're not connected, you'll see the last set of things that were there when you did connect. So I see my Google Docs as if I were connected. I go find my document as if I were connected. I click on it, and it brings it up in the browser to work on as if I were connected.
Okay, but you have to be connected to your Google Docs somehow.
At some point, yes.
Yeah, to update
not
it.
Not constantly. So like I said, if I'm connected to Google Docs at home, syncs it up. I close my laptop. I take it off to the beach. I sit on the beach where there's no network connectivity. I open it up. I see my Google Docs. I find my document. I open it up. I write a couple of chapters. I close the thing and put it away. And that, though, all those new chapters I wrote are only on the Chromebook until I get back to my house and open it up again. Now it's connected to the network. And the first thing it does is sync everything up so that now all my stuff is saved back up on the web again.
And many Chromebooks have cellular service built in. So if you're not in Wi-Fi, which is hard to do these days,
right?
You can use cellular to get to the internet. But one of the points of the Chromebook is that most people, average people, use their computer for web and mail, which you need to be connected to the internet anyway. So almost all the time, you're going to have Wi-Fi. You're going to go somewhere that has Wi-Fi, and if you don't, you can get a model that has cellular.
Right.
Well, when you're on the beach typing, what program do you use? There must be a program running within Chromebook then.
Well, it's essentially Google Docs.
For documents and spreadsheets and presentations.
Yeah, it's the same programs you use when you're at home on the web.
I see. Okay.
It is exactly the same. What you don't have, if, for example, when I'm at home on the web, I can double click on a word and look it up.
Okay, so right. that's what I meant when I said embedded program. So there's Google Docs is running in your Chromebook.
Yeah, essentially it is, yes.
Okay.
But now I can't do the things that require me to so for example, at home, I can pull down under something tools, I think it is. Under tools, there's a thing called voice typing. So once I turn that on, I can now dictate my book into the Chromebook. Dear John, : new paragraph. How are you? ? Right? I can do all of that stuff. I can dictate my book with voice. I cannot do that sitting at the beach because that requires a connection to the internet. I can't do research. So one of the things I can do is I can say, I want to talk about orchids. And so I can look up an orchid and then put that in my book. Yeah. But I can't do that at the beach because I don't have a connection.
And right. if you okay. don't have cellular in your Chromebook, most smartphones have a hotspot option.
Right.
And if you're at the beach, you probably want to be at the beach, not writing your book.
Yes, in general, if I'm at the beach, I'm at the beach.
Although it looks like you're working, so when you're looking at other things on the beach.
Yeah, right. But I will tell you this. If you are a Time Warner customer, you have Time Warner in an awful lot of places, even at the many beaches. Certainly,
so you can use the what do they call them, hotspots?
Exactly. Yep. And in addition to that, most of my writing I do, the cliched, I go to a coffee shop, and they all have free Wi-Fi nowadays.
Yeah.
So it is actually difficult to not find to be in a spot where you have no connection option whatsoever.
Okay. So then at home, if you're not near any of these spots, you got to log in through your own routers or what have you at home.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, good. That
okay
answers some of my questions. Thank you very much.
Sure. Bye. Bye-bye. I have found that there is almost no time when I cannot use my Chromebook.
Mm-hmm. I got the cellular iPad just in case I'm somewhere where there's no Wi-Fi because I do a lot of service calls. And we went with T-Mobile because they give you 200 megs free every month.
Right.
I almost never use my 200 megs free because there's almost always Wi-Fi. One company I go to where the office is buried too deep inside the building to get to the Wi-Fi, and their corporate Wi-Fi is secured and encrypted and you need special passwords for it.
Right. But in general, wherever I go, somebody's got free Wi-Fi.
Yep.
I went to Brugger's this morning to get a bagel, and they have free Wi-Fi.
Yep.
I thought, okay, it's everywhere. And
there's a lot of places you can go virtually, and find some.
Sometimes you have to ask for the password.
Yeah.
But,
right. Yep. And like I said, if you're a Time Warner customer, they've got Time Warner, was it Passport, I think it's called? Pretty much everywhere. So
I've gone to some buildings where there's like four Time Warner networks that pop up.
Right.
I'm close enough to. Okay, why aren't they all the same name? Well, they are. It's cable Wi-Fi.
Right.
But why do I see four different cable Wi-Fi?
Right. You're somewhere in the middle of four transmitters is the reason. right there. All right, listen, you people have wasted 2 solid hours of your life. Get out there and do something interesting with the rest of your day. But we want to thank you for having spent this time with us on behalf of Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Gabe the Amazing Intern, and eventually he's going to be Gabe the Wonder Horse. I don't know where I'm going with all this. I'm Nick Francesco. We want to thank you all for having spent the last 2 hours with us. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we'll be back to see you next week with a whole lot more sound bites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be safe. Have fun.